The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, High Stakes, Downtown Raleigh Boosters and Businesses Search for Answers as Crime and Safety Take Center Stage. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, We're Not Safe Right Now, Downtown Raleigh Boosters and Businesses Search for Answers as Crime and Safety Take Center Stage. And this is written by Dane Huffman. Just before noon on a Monday in November, a young man in a crisp, striped shirt slides onto a red stool at the Mecca restaurant, puts his sunglasses on the counter and says, Two eggs scrambled. No meat? The waitress asks as she scribbles on her pad. Oh, bacon, he says. She nods and adds a line. To his left, down the counter, a man in a hoodie hunches over his lunch. To his right, a woman in a security guard's uniform picks up her order. It's a scene that has played out for decades at the Mecca, and yet it's different now. There are only six customers and six employees. Upstairs, the green booths, once full of lawyers and bankers in white shirts and power ties, are empty. The Mecca has fed the soul of Raleigh since 1930. But at noon, it feels like the clock is hitting midnight as a downtown that once pulsated with promise seeks a new path to prosperity. Storefronts along the 100 block of Fayetteville Street are empty. Office vacancy downtown has risen above 12%. Business owners plead with the city council for help with rising crime and aggressive begging. And blocks away, the sounds of gunshots rattle homeowners in the leafy neighborhoods near Glenwood South. The days of Raleigh being blissfully boring are gone as city leaders scramble to help a downtown that beamed with promise before the pandemic and the riots that followed the death of George Floyd in 2020. We're not safe right now, says Greg Haddam, whose Empire Properties owns the Mecca. We're better, but we have not gotten there. Raleigh native Andy Andrews, the CEO of Dominion Realty Partners, walked the streets of downtown during the pandemic when the streets were largely empty except for a rising homeless population. Got accosted every day, he says. Downtown hasn't regained its vibrancy, even as other places in the Triangle, North Hills, and emerging downtowns and cities such as Cary are thriving. To see it falling apart, it's a little personal, Andrews says. It's personal, too, for Debbie Holt. In 2008, she bought Clyde Cooper's Barbecue, a staple downtown since 1938. Business remains strong thanks to a loyal customer base and a hefty catering business, but there are days when the cash register will be $1,000 short of what it once was, and she no longer opens on Mondays. Holt says one man overdosed on heroin in the Cooper's bathroom, and there was a drug deal in the restaurant a few weeks ago. The lack of workers back in offices and an uneasiness about crime has had an impact. When you feel safe, you're confident. People do not feel safe and confident in downtown Raleigh, she says. They're not getting out and roaming and enjoying themselves. After years of championing downtown, Holt plans to move. Downtown Raleigh is not what it used to be, she says. Downtown's trajectory changes. As Bill King spreads out sheets of data, the view from the Downtown Raleigh Alliance's conference room is sublime, with Fayetteville Street 11 stories below and grand views of North Carolina's capital. Cranes rise over rooftops, but those cranes also represent a significant shift. Before COVID, investors coveted office towers, but in 2023, not a single office tower has launched downtown. Instead, residences are rising. King notes that 3,221 residential units were delivered or under construction this year, and 7,256 residential units are planned. All that means the population of downtown will double, with major implications for the city's core and the businesses that serve it. The Central Business District is changing, Mayor Marianne Baldwin says. Residential is the future. The DRA tracks pedestrian traffic through a service that analyzes cell phone data and other key points, and King, the DRA president and CEO, says resident traffic is up 29.5% from before the pandemic, and visitor traffic has rebounded to 94% of 2019 numbers. But empty offices are a problem, as he notes worker traffic is about 63% of what it once was, and that's obvious on Mondays and Fridays when many work from home and leave light traffic and empty benches along Fayetteville Street. It's symbolically hugely important for downtown, King says. A lot of downtown is doing well. We've got to get Fayetteville Street to that place. It symbolically carries a lot of weight. Raleigh and Wake County are making a big bet on the Raleigh Convention Center with $387 million earmarked to expand it. And Dix Park is only a mile away, and city leaders are weighing options, even creative ones such as gondolas, to further connect the park with downtown. But the monies from hotel and restaurant revenue underscore the issue. King noted that in Glenwood South, September sales were 53% above pre-pandemic levels, although that's not adjusted for inflation. Downtown Raleigh overall, which includes Glenwood South, saw the revenue rise 25%, but the Fayetteville Street corridor was only at 96% of pre-pandemic levels. You can't have a successful city or region if its downtown is bad, King says. It's important to the rest of the city. Other cities also struggle. Raleigh's downtown isn't the only one struggling, as other American cities have seen their urban cores empty out. We're seeing in downtowns the disruption of demand fundamentals that has not been seen since the 1970s with the migration to the suburbs, says Michael Smith, the CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners. In Uptown Charlotte, office vacancy rates have passed 17%, he says, and five buildings are in some form of foreclosure. If you're a big city and you have had some growth, you're not going to be spared from these disruptive forces, Smith says. Paul Levy, the CEO of Philadelphia's Center City District, analyzed 26 U.S. cities in an October 3rd report titled Downtown's Rebound, the Data-Driven Path to Recovery. While the paper analyzed Charlotte and not Raleigh or Durham, it found some important trends. Downtowns heavy on the hospitality industry, such as San Antonio and Nashville, Tennessee, recovered workers the fastest. Downtowns driven by the tech industry, such as San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, Denver, and Atlanta, saw the slowest recovery of workers. Nashville recovered 100% of its pedestrian traffic overall, including workers, residents, and visitors, from 2019 to second quarter 2023, while San Francisco was at 69%. Charlotte was pushing 80%. Levy notes that downtowns were given up for dead back in the 1970s before rebounding with more amenities and residences. That progress has been thwarted, he writes, by the threat of gun violence, drug addiction, and homelessness and income inequality. Now, Levy says, cities are places that must continually reinvent themselves. Part of that includes residential growth. In 1990, Levy writes, downtowns basically were places to work. But despite the pandemic, most of the downtowns analyzed have larger populations now than in 2019. For example, Charlotte's urban core has grown its residential population by roughly 10% since 2019. The path forward, the report says, means clean and safe downtowns are essential. Marketing strategies should focus on returning workers and visitors. Highly visible streetscapes and park improvements can yield major dividends. Converting offices to residential is one possibility, but hardly a panacea for the problems we confront. Charlotte Smith says the concerns are so systemic that widespread community response is required, and he notes that downtowns are critical tax bases for their cities. If we end up with significant value corrections in our largest business centers, we'll reallocate the tax burden, Smith says. That means more of it will be carried by single-family homeowners, residential. Hannum makes the same point, claiming that the boundary of the Durham-Raleigh Alliance contributes 5% to the city's coffers. He says that his companies, which are focused on downtown and own 80 buildings and 7 restaurants, have lost about a dozen tenants recently because the clients weren't comfortable downtown. But Hadam also says downtown Raleigh needs to be a leader in the national discussion about how to build a city's future. We're Raleigh, North Carolina, by God, he says. We're better than those other communities. Slow response concerns businesses. For Raleigh, some downtown business owners say the downward spiral began with the pandemic and escalated with the riots of May 30 through 31st, 2020. It was the most violence in the history of Raleigh, a town which, unlike many southern capitals, was not burned in the Civil War and was largely peaceful through the 1960s. And it left many business owners wary. You can go back to the riots and how we were let down by the mayor who didn't protect us or any business owners or residents, says Alan Horwitz, owner of Reliable Loan and Jewelry, which has been downtown more than 70 years. It set downtown back years, he says. After the riots, Horowitz spent $60,000 for stronger glass and other measures to protect the business. Holt of Clyde Cooper's, too, says city leaders should have done more at the time and in the aftermath. The problem I have is with the protection part, Holt says. If Raleigh had protection, you'd feel safe. People do not feel safe coming downtown. Baldwin says that the lack of police officers is a national issue and points to some progress, saying the Raleigh Police Department had tripled the number of open positions when she became mayor than it does now. She also says the new ACORN unit with a combination of officers and social workers has helped. King and others acknowledge that rising gang activity, in addition to the homeless population, has been an issue. The DRA has even hired private security officers to help. The rise of fentanyl is impacting Raleigh as well. In 2020, Raleigh police seized 3,812 units, essentially doses of fentanyl. In 2023, that number jumped to 6,008. Architecture firm Ratio found itself in the center of the issue after moving to 227 Fayetteville Street in 2016. Basically, pre-pandemic, it was a very safe place, says Hal Bowen, the Raleigh studio leader. Felt great, vibrant, exciting, and all that. In the past year, Bowen would notice gang members in the two plazas on the sides of the building, especially on the north side at the main entrance. Clearly, drug deals going on, he says. Bowen and other tenants wrote letters voicing their deep concerns to Mayor Baldwin and others, pleading for help. He says Baldwin came to visit and listened to the staff about their concerns, and the Raleigh Police Department ramped up its presence in the area, including putting a police cruiser there. It quickly changed. It used to be at 4 p.m. around there, you'd see the plaza full of a lot of people with nothing else to do, smoking pot, Holt says. Police Chief Estella Patterson says the force has increased the number of officers patrolling the Go Raleigh station and surrounding areas and is cracking down on loitering, trespassing, and other issues. So we've increased the number of officers and their presence there, she says, and you know, it's basically zero tolerance. The department still has about 80 open positions, and its starting salary at $50,301 lags others in the area. Baldwin says the number is actually around $53,000 based on city records. Patterson appreciates the support of the Raleigh Police Department Foundation, formed by Brenda Gibson, to support the force. Gibson, whose husband Ron is the former CEO of Highwoods Properties, reached out to philanthropists and city leaders, and the nonprofit has raised $3 million. That doesn't support salaries, but will help fund new motorcycles for the greenways and a camera system for real-time information. We all pay taxes, but this is over and above that, Gibson says. Overall, Ratio's Bowen is seeing some positives downtown. He says crowds are returning at night and it can even be difficult to get a table at the more desirable restaurants. It's standing room only, which is great, he says. The future of 227 Fayetteville Street looks promising after Lou Mashakas, owner of LM Restaurants, recently bid $14.7 million to buy the building. We're buying this building for a long-term investment, Mashakas says. I'm not worried about safety. The city is on it. Ratio has no plans to leave. We love it there, Bowen says. Glenwood South has separate concerns. Glenwood South is only six blocks from Fayetteville Street, and yet it feels a world away. The area was still a gritty industrial part of town when Chris Post and his partner opened Mojo's Burger Joint at the Peace Street intersection in 2020, but change happened rapidly, especially after the Great Recession, as a slew of bars packed into the area, such as the Raleigh Beer Garden in 2015. The crowds grew bigger, louder, and rowdier. Before COVID-19, Mojo's was open until 1 a.m. It now closes at 10 a.m. With the proliferation of the bars on Glenwood, just for the safety of the staff, it was better to close a little bit earlier, Post says. He notes that the trouble times are when the bars close and intoxicated patrons fill the streets. Also following the changes is Graham Johnson, the Eastern North Carolina Executive Director for Duncan Parnell, which provides professional services such as signs and graphics. In the past decade, nightclubs and bars have replaced the plumbing businesses and industrial suppliers that once lined the streets along with Duncan Parnell. It doesn't affect us and our ability to run our business, but I've heard some other people say that it has some impact on them, says Johnson, who often finds broken glass in his parking lot. The bigger impact is on the residential stuff, the people who live down here. It's loud. There's throw-up all over the place. You see guys taking a whiz right off the side of the road. That escalates on weekends as thousands of people crowd the sidewalks and spill into the adjacent neighborhoods. Our issues are totally different than the transit center and Moore Square, says Larry Miller, the president of the Glenwood South Neighborhood Collaborative. They have people hanging around in the daytime panhandling. We don't have that in Glenwood South. The nightlife, Miller says, doesn't directly affect many businesses, but the perception that the area is unsafe does. Some people are hesitant to come down there due to dinner, he says. It's the perception that affects them, not that their customers have been accosted or robbed. That's generally not a thing. Still, safety concerns skyrocketed this summer after the general manager of nearby Midwood Smokehouse, David Millett, was assaulted in the 500 block of Glenwood Avenue on August 26th at 2 a.m. Millett, 27, died 6 days later. As concerns rose, Raleigh police ramped up enforcement. From August 2nd, 2022 to November 2nd, 2022, the police made just 46 arrests in the Glenwood South area. Over that same time frame this year, the police made 174 arrests. Only a small percentage of those were related to opioid abuse. The increased crime statistics are not necessarily bad, Miller says. It shows that the police are out there doing their job, getting the guns and drugs off the streets. The police have also blocked off parts of Glenwood Avenue on weekend nights, reducing the chance of drivers hitting pedestrians and freeing up space for people to walk. The plan has worked fabulously, Chief Patterson says. Our business owners down there have raved about it. Matt Kenner, the owner of the new Nomad Cocktail Bar, says the closing of the street and the increased police presence has definitely been a positive impact at this point, but many, like Post, feel the city was slow to respond. It's been frustrating over the last couple of years. It's not to the point where I'm ready to move or anything like that, he says, but I do think over the last few years the city leaders and the city staff have been very reactive rather than proactive, looking for answers. Raleigh has had some misses downtown in the past. In the 1970s, it turned Fayetteville Street into a pedestrian mall before changing that back in 2006. It built a second-rate convention center in the middle of that street before building the current structure. And in the 1990s, it failed to put its new sports arena downtown at a time when such stadiums emerged as major drivers of urban renewal. But downtown entered the last decade on a roll. Developers such as the Fallon Company out of Boston paid $17 million for 1.85 acres on Hillsborough Street. Downtown even added a grocery store when Publix opened on Peace Street in 2020. But what now and what next? The Downtown Raleigh Alliance has hired Interface Studio of Philadelphia to help reimagine downtown and expects a report in first quarter 2024. The hope is to spark fresh ideas and possibilities. From the cranes to the Fayetteville Street corridor, it feels like downtown Raleigh is shifting from being a traditional business core to a new mix with more focus on residential. But as these trends emerge, the business owners try to hang on. Some, such as Chidi Kumar's Garland Restaurant, have already gone. Jennifer Martin, the executive director of Shop Local Raleigh, says about 150 of their 800 members are downtown, and some downtown businesses have seen sales drop 30 to 40%. The Fayetteville Street Corridor businesses, they're the ones who are struggling the most, she says. Holt, with Clyde Cooper's Barbecue, isn't willing to wait. At the rate downtown Raleigh is going now, she says, I'll be in a nursing home before this gets turned around. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the viewpoint page as the editor's notebook is related to the cover story. The headline, Can We Move Downtown Raleigh Forward? And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. In conversing with Lou Machakos, the patriarch of the Carolina Alehouse family that also owns scores of other restaurants across multiple states, it was clear that he considers safety and security the linchpin of any investment, whether it be real estate, restaurant, hotel, or residential quarters. And why shouldn't he? Machakos is about to plant some $15 million into buying the 100,000-square-foot 227 Fayetteville Street building, which has come under scrutiny because of the environment around the building. As of this week, after a quick drive-by one evening, I noticed nothing unusual. Greg Haddam, who owns 80 properties, with most located in downtown Raleigh, mimics Machakos' sentiment. Private money must rely on public safety to grow communities, regions, and wealth. Of course, in return, private money should also try a little harder to balance the rising income inequality faced in so many of our metros. But that issue is for another day. Today, we focus on downtown Raleigh. As you read through managing editor Dane Huffman and reporter Laura Bromet's deep dive on downtown Raleigh, what's working and what's not, It's hard not to come out with an impression that the safety and crime issues faced by Raleigh can be solved with proper planning and reallocation of public resources. Downtown Raleigh is the gateway to the Triangle. If downtown Raleigh gets all the press that lists all the problems, our messaging of being one of the best places to live in this country eventually will be lost, and everyone loses if that happens. Hence, we are now dealing in a high-stakes environment. In recent weeks, the Raleigh Police Department has increased its presence around areas considered problematic, especially near Moore Square and in pockets of Glenwood South. What does a police presence do? It makes people think twice before misbehaving. That, of course, is unless we are talking fentanyl, which requires far broader action than just law enforcement. As mentioned in this column earlier, crime in downtown Raleigh increased 60% in the first 8 months of the year compared to last year. We want to see that number drop in the final 4 months of this year when the numbers come out in early 2024. Huffman's reporting addresses the issue of how crime plays a role in growth and how metros often find themselves unprepared when a once-in-a-100-year event such as the pandemic is upon us. Philadelphian Paul Levy, who has analyzed years of data from different downtowns across the country, argues the path forward to a vibrant downtown is 1. Cleanliness and safety, and 2. A marketing strategy to lure back returning workers and visitors. Raleigh Mayor Marianne Baldwin believes the downtown vibrancy will come by adding to the 11,000-plus people living in the Central Business District. 4 major projects, a new Omni Hotel, development at Shaw University, John Keynes Downtown South, and Dominion Realty Partner Salisbury Square Project collectively amount to more than $1.2 billion in new developments alone. Not only are these projects going to add jobs, if they are ever completed, they all will play a big part in revitalizing downtown in the forms of more housing, more restaurants, and more public space. And as Shaw President Paulette Dillard says, diversity and inclusion cannot be left behind, and it must be intentional. As our deep dive this week on downtown Raleigh states, we could be in a better place now. Our area's crown jewel has lost some of its shine. The first step is acknowledging that we have a problem. We are hoping we have now entered the second step, finding solutions. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings. This is written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Trees plentiful, prices stable. One of the joys of living in North Carolina is the availability of Christmas trees from the North Carolina mountains, and this year, the supply appears plentiful, and prices have somewhat stabilized as the holiday season arrives. While the cost of production has gone up in the last year for Christmas tree farmers, supply for trees this year is very good, and we're seeing only small increases in prices, says Jamie Bookwalter, a mountain conifer specialist with NC State University. While the price of trees at retail lots in some ways is out of the hands of Christmas tree farmers, the choose and cut farmers I've talked to are very sensitive to consumer price points, even though demand is still very high, he says. North Carolina produced 4 million trees in the most recent census of agriculture, done in 2017. Only Oregon, at 4.7 million, produced more trees. The Fraser firs, which thrive in the cold mountain air and represent 96% of the state's Christmas trees, can take about 10 years to grow, and many growers went out of business during the Great Recession. That led to a tighter supply in recent years. Then last year, surging labor costs led to price hikes. This year, trees appear plentiful and prices have more or less stabilized. This year, everyone who wants a Christmas tree will certainly be able to find one, although you might want to call ahead if you're looking for trees over 9 feet, Bookwalter says. Raleigh CEO hits pause on beach compound. Pendo's Todd Olson and his wife Laura have pulled an application for a proposed compound at the southern end of Topsail Beach, WECT reported. The Olsons wanted to build houses on 24 acres of a 150-acre area known as The Point, but conservationists erupted, causing town officials to think twice about approving it. This property has spent the better part of 18 years for sale, plenty of time for the town or community to develop a conservation plan, the Olsons said. It seems increasingly likely that a developer with deeper pockets and more experience will successfully develop this land and permanently alter the state of The Point. Entrepreneur takes a new path. A local entrepreneur who spent most of his career as a tech executive is jumping into the home improvement game. Shaluka Pereira had worked for a variety of firms, including IBM and Citrix, and also was an investor in the Nickel Point Brewing Company in Raleigh's Five Points. Now, Pereira has grabbed the Cary and Apex rights for Renovation Sells, a national outfit where homeowners can upgrade their home and get financing if needed. Finally, this past July, I decided I was completely done with high tech and wanted to get into small business, he says. The big reason is I've always dabbled in real estate. I love that space. Pereira likes the fact that the concept can help those who want to jazz up their home before selling it and those who've decided to stay put rather than sell with high interest rates. Schools create path to college. Three Nash County institutions are partnering to create an affordable pathway from high school to a bachelor's degree within the county. Nash County Public Schools, Nash Community College, and NC Wesleyan University, through the new Nash County Education Network, will cap tuition at $20,000 for students who pursue an associate's degree at Nash Community College and then a bachelor's at Wesleyan. Students in the network will also be offered access to academic advising and financial aid counseling by Wesleyan before enrolling at the university. Ravenscroft gets a new leader. An elite private school in Raleigh is preparing for a leadership change after Doreen Kelly's remarkable run. The Ravenscroft School trustees selected Derek Willard, the head of Augusta Preparatory Day School in Martinez, Georgia, to replace Kelly after she leaves next summer. Before Augusta Prep, Willard served for 22 years at Providence Day School in Charlotte. He received a bachelor's degree in biology from Davidson College, a master of education from Winthrop University, and served in the U.S. Army as a tank and scout platoon leader. Willard says he is excited to join the Ravenscroft family. As for Kelly, she might not know how to drive a tank, but she's certainly driven Ravenscroft to new heights since she became head of school in 2003. The former volleyball player at the University of Pennsylvania has seen the campus expand and the stature of the school rise. Ravenscroft now has more than 1,200 students. And finally, local CRO accused of botching trial. A California biotech is blaming a recent Phase 3 clinical trial failure on a Triangle company. A Celrin, in a statement November 27, claimed it recently identified clinical trial execution errors involving its CRO and one of the vendors engaged by the CRO in a study involving its lead drug, Izokibep, that's spelled I-Z-O-K-I-B-E-P. The contract research organization that worked with Acelerin on the study was Fortrea, a public company headquartered in Durham. Acelerin said it would have a third-party audit the trials for TRIA conducted and then determine whether to transition its ongoing Izokibep trials to a new CRO or continue with Fortrea. Acelerin also says they would not hire Fortrea for any new trials. Fortrea, which spun out of LabCorp earlier this year, disputed Acelerin's claims and said it objects to the implications that Fortrea's study's conduct impacted the trial outcomes. Former Quintiles executive Tom Pike is the CEO of Fortrea. And now we turn to our top news story in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Lauren Onosorge. Apple spending millions on office space across the Triangle. As Apple stays quiet about the status of its planned campus in Research Triangle Park, it's being less subtle elsewhere. The tech giant this year has filed multiple permits for construction work at its temporary offices in Cary and Durham. While Apple hasn't provided any updates on its plans for a 3,000-job hub in the region announced in 2021, the Silicon Valley company has been filling its temporary space in Cary with workers and appears ready to soon do the same in Durham. The 301 MetLife Way building in Cary that Apple took over in 2021 has obtained multiple construction permits this year for demolition as well as alterations of multiple floors in the seven-story building. The estimated construction cost comes to around $20 million. The company has extensive plans for Durham as well. In 2022, Triangle Business Journal reported Apple was leasing space in a new office building off Slater Road. Public property records show a series of upfits for that space, which totals 140,000 square feet across four stories, including a pair of permits for interior alterations that were issued this year. One permit issued in April shows $3.4 million in estimated costs for electric and mechanical work. Build cost is estimated to be $15.5 million. Another permit for demolition comes with an estimated cost of $700,000. Construction at the building at 831 Slater Road is ongoing. Meanwhile, highly redacted site plans released in June show details for the first phase of Apple's RTP campus, including a 41-acre development with six buildings and a parking garage. A timeline for building the RTP campus has not been released. Apple's first year of eligibility for the $845.8 million incentives package it was approved for by the state is this year, but records show it's the jobs themselves, not construction in RTP, that's the first milestone, meaning that even without construction kicking off, Apple could meet initial eligibility terms by hiring locally. In April 2021, Apple announced plans for an East Coast campus in RTP that would focus on engineering, artificial intelligence, and machine learning. Apple said it would invest $552 million and create at least 3,000 jobs, paying an average of $187,000 a year. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and finance. Carry investors put $50 million to work. Co-founders Capital looks to add more investments ahead. What started as a seed investor in Carry has become a major player that's writing million-dollar checks. Tim McLaughlin, managing partner of Co-Founders Capital, says a bigger fund means flexibility and it also means bigger checks for the Triangle companies on its radar. Co-Founders, which serial entrepreneur David Gardner founded in 2015, closed its third fund in February at just shy of $50 million. McLaughlin says the firm began investing those dollars right away. To date, the fund has deployed more than $7 million in seven different companies. McLaughlin says the pipeline is such that the number could grow by one or two investments to round out the year. Co-Founders has grown steadily over the years, as have the size of its checks. The average check size of its first fund was about $300,000. The second, McLaughlin estimates, was around the $600,000 range. This fund, it will probably be north of $1 million for our average first check into companies, he says. A larger fund means co-founders can be less reliant on outside capital for its portfolio companies, but McLaughlin says there are other advantages, like the ability to get the right team out of the gate, versus the team that we could afford. If there are rock stars that are more expensive, we can bring the right players in, McLaughlin says. UNC student looks to make optometry more accessible. Greenville native Sasha Serkin is an honor student at UNC Chapel Hill, but she's also the CEO of a company trying to make optometry more accessible with a glasses kit that creates personalized corrective lenses, all without having to wait for an eye appointment. At 20, she has won multiple grants and made big plans for the startup, WayZ, spelled W-E-Y-E, ZE. In sixth grade, she had to move closer to the chalkboard to read the writing. It took 2 months to get an optometry appointment and 2 weeks for the Costco glasses. But she wondered if you could create layered lenses to mimic what you would see from a pair of glasses. In the 10th grade, she decided to go all in. So when COVID happened, she concentrated on optics for her physics requirement and started winning pitch competitions, validating that the product worked. After high school, she enrolled at UNC and doubled down on her efforts, soon winning a $10,000 NC Idea Micro Grant to take the idea further. And finally, Synchrogistics looks to top $80 million again. One of the fastest growing companies in the Triangle is quietly headed for another $80 million year. Synchrogistics, the second fastest growing private company in Triangle Business Journal's 2023 Fast 50 Awards, is a 40-employee analytics and technology-enabled logistics firm that aims to optimize a company's transportation processes. It was co-founded by married entrepreneurs Erica and Bill Jackson in their basement in 2010. Bill Jackson, who'd been doing consulting in the transportation space, saw an opportunity to bring an analytics-focused approach to the sector. Erica Jackson, an attorney, had also done consulting in the space. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page, written by Zach Ezone. Curry merger creates $11 billion enterprise. Curry RMB will now call Chicago its HQ, not Raleigh. Curry is spelled C-U-R-I. A Raleigh company is continuing its geographic expansion through a merger with a Chicago investment firm. Curry, a healthcare advisory firm, has reached an agreement to acquire a majority stake in RMB Capital. As part of the agreement, Curry Capital, the financial advisory business unit of Curry, formerly Medical Mutual Holdings, will combine with RMB, creating an entity with $11 billion in assets under management. The firms did not disclose the terms of the deal. The transaction is expected to close by the end of the year. The combined entity will operate under the name Curry RMB Capital and be led by existing Curry Capital CEO Dimitri Eliopoulos. RMB founding partner and CEO Dick Burridge will become executive chairman. The remainder of the leadership teams of both firms will remain in place. Curry RMB Capital will be based in Chicago, while Curry Capital's Raleigh headquarters will remain, quote, an important office in the southeast for the combined entity, the company say. Eliopoulos was one of RMB's first employees when it was formed in 2005. After nearly two decades, he left RMB to join Curry and help launch Curry Capital about 4 years ago. The firm's first objective was to gain a strong footing in North Carolina with the aim of eventually growing elsewhere in the U.S., Eliopoulos says. Last year, Eliopoulos learned RMB was seeking a strategic partner to make a deal. This was around the same time that Curry, which provides advisory services to physicians and healthcare organizations, was involved in conversations to merge with a professional liability company in Minnesota called Constellation. Constellation served physicians in the Midwest and western parts of the country, and as a result of the merger, Curry gained a presence in those states. RMB has offices across the same regions, including in states like Michigan, Minneapolis, and Colorado. Through this deal, Curry Capital is able to provide more services to its clients in those areas. RMB's search for a strategic partner led to a formal process, of which Curry Capital was one of a dozen parties interested in acquiring the firm. RTP firm sees positive results for Alzheimer's. A small pharmaceutical company in Research Triangle Park is considering its next steps after seeing positive results in a clinical study evaluating its treatment for Alzheimer's disease. In a recent phase 2 study, T3D Therapeutics saw results that suggest its lead product candidate can be disease-modifying in advanced stages of Alzheimer's. This is a disease area with a lot of focus in the pharmaceutical industry and an estimated patient potential of more than 6 million Americans. The next step for the clinical program called T3D-959 is a phase 3 study which would require additional resources. The company, founded in 2013, has 5 employees, including CEO John Didsbury. While the company has an office in RTP, it has operated virtually since its formation, working with contractors and a scientific advisory board to move its program forward. But this model wouldn't be sustainable for a capital-intensive Phase 3 study. And finally, Nighthawk planning to divest pharma. Morrisville's Nighthawk Biosciences is planning to divest one of its subsidiaries as it faces financial challenges. Nighthawk in September began actively marketing the sale of Eleusis Therapeutics, a small drug developer in New Jersey that has developed an anthrax antitoxin called Anthem. While no divestiture has been finalized, the company's latest earnings report reflects Eleusis as a discontinued operation. The move follows Nighthawk laying off 13 workers, about 14% of its employees, in September. The layoffs were part of Nighthawk scaling back its research and development efforts. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromet. Brazilian eatery enters Cary Market. Boteco do Brasil will open close to Prestonwood Country Club. A new restaurant is now taking the place of a Cary restaurant that closed in August after facing rising costs. Boteco do Brasil, a new concept, is opening in the former Catalan Tapas Bar space at 4214 Northwest Cary Parkway near La Farm Bakery. The restaurant is slated to open in February. Boteco do Brasil is aiming to bring authentic Brazilian cuisine to the area, owner Beth Andrade says. She's opening the restaurant with her husband, Daniel Simon. Andrade did not purchase the Catalan Tapas Bar business. As the restaurant was already closed, negotiations with the landlord commenced, she says. The new restaurant will serve appetizers, shareables, small plates, and main dishes. Its menu will include items like coxino, deep-fried chicken croquettes, bolinho de bacalhau, codfish fritters, queijo coalho, grilled cheese on a stick, and picana, grilled top sirloin cap steak. The recipes will be original Brazilian recipes, Andrade said. The dessert menu will feature dishes like brigadeiros, chocolate truffles, quindim, custard made with egg yolks and sugar, and beijinhos, coconut truffles. The drink menu will offer a range of Brazilian cocktails. Boteco do Brasil will be the first restaurant for Andrade. She chose the space because it's in Cary, the heart of the RTP area, she says. The non-Latino foot traffic is big in this location, and this will help us achieve one of our goals. That is to show our cuisine and culture to our non-Brazilian friends, Andrade says. Catalan Tapas Bar closed in August due to issues like rising costs of goods, increasing overhead costs, and staffing difficulties, the owner told Triangle Business Journal. The restaurant, which opened in late 2020, was known for its eclectic atmosphere and served a menu of Spanish tapas, wine, and cocktails. Downtown Cary adding new sushi restaurant. Zest, a sushi small plates and seafood restaurant, is planned to open next spring in a new development in downtown Cary. Zest will be the latest location of a concept by Clean Plate Restaurants, a hospitality group operating several independent and small chain restaurants. It will be located at 175 East Chatham Street on the ground floor of the Rogers Building in downtown Cary. The town opened a much-anticipated park last month, and the Rogers is a mixed-use development featuring two buildings connected by a three-story atrium at the site of the former Rogers Restaurant and Motel. The restaurant will have an upscale atmosphere, says Steve Rockland, restaurant and construction development partner at Clean Plate. It was originally announced as Sono Sushi. Its menu will be similar to an existing Zest restaurant in Roswell, Georgia. It will include sushi rolls, small plates, raw oysters, sandwiches, larger entrees, and a full bar. And finally on this page, North Face to open at Streets of South Point. The North Face, a global leader in outdoor clothing and gear, is opening a store in the streets of South Point Mall. The new store will be located inside the mall in a space formerly occupied by Microsoft, which announced the closure of all of its physical retail stores in 2020. The North Face is set to open in early 2024. The space measures 4,300 square feet and is located on the lower level of the mall in the Belt Corridor. The brand was founded in 1966 in California and is now headquartered in Denver. The North Face has two standalone stores in North Carolina, one in Raleigh's Crabtree Valley Mall and one in Charlotte's South Park Mall. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Ben Tobin. Raleigh developer bets big on Sanford. DRP planning 300-unit apartment complex on 25 acres. A Raleigh developer is ready to make a splash off a popular intersection in a red-hot Greater Triangle municipality. Dominion Realty Partners is planning a multifamily development project across 24.7 acres, consisting of up to 300 apartments off the intersection of Tramway Road and US 1 in Sanford. An LLC tied to the developer closed on the land earlier this month for $1.85 million, according to Lee County deed records. Chris Carlino, a principal for Dominion Realty Partners, says the site is a great case study in the changing dynamics and boundaries of our market. Sanford has been on our radar for some time now. We have just been waiting for the right fit, Carlino says. As the Triangle region continues to grow, the inventory of infill land continues to dwindle, and we have started to focus on some of the ancillary markets that surround and support the Triangle. Our goal here is to be able to provide market-rate housing inventory to an area that has not historically had a ton of apartment development, a factor that we believe historically might have limited economic development opportunities for the county. Carlino did detail the estimated square footage and price ranges of the apartments, a construction timeline, and how much Dominion Realty Partners will invest to build the apartments. Dominion Realty Partners plans to offer high-end energy-efficient and smart apartments, he says. Additional amenities for the apartments include a pool, exercise facility and club, and game room. The project will create 350 jobs through the construction process. This is the latest residential development for Sanford, a booming city in Lee County with more than 31,000 people that has caught developers' eyes for decades for residential, commercial, and industrial projects. Hotel along I-95 sold for $8.5 million. An Eastern North Carolina hotelier just made a major purchase in Johnston County. Ranchod LLC, a group tied to Jayesh Patel, who manages hotels in Goldsboro, purchased the Country Inn and Suites at 250 North Equity Drive in Smithfield for $8.5 million, according to Johnston County deed records. Patel, who manages the Country Inn and Suites in Goldsboro, could not be reached for comment. The Smithfield Hotel has 77 rooms and was built in 2016. The previous owner, Paradise LLC of Virginia, purchased the land in 2010 for $900,000, according to Johnston County deed records. Country Inn and Suites is a brand from Choice Hotels, a major hotel conglomerate that has 7,000 locations across the nation. The Country Inn and Suites brand has more than 530 locations worldwide. And finally, Texas investor pours $1 million into Sanford. A private equity firm in Texas has made a splash in the Sanford area by paying more than $1 million for more than 100 acres. Allied Industrial Partners of Houston, which focuses on industrial investments, bought more than 123 wooded acres in Lee County last month, according to deed records. The property is located at 1751 Collin Road, just a few miles north of downtown Sanford. It's unclear what Allied Industrial Partners plans to do with the land. Representatives of the company did not respond to requests seeking comment. The firm's portfolio companies deal in infrastructure, power utilities, waste management, recycling, and industrial services. And our last reporter page is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. D.C. developer plans 40-story structure. City of Raleigh approves another downtown tower. A collection of lots near Morgan Street Food Hall in downtown Raleigh is now eligible for a 40-story development. Dalian Development of Washington, D.C. saw its 40-story rezoning request for 9 lots on Hillsborough and West Morgan Streets approved by Raleigh City Council recently. The 6-1 vote, with Council Member Christina Jones voting against, changed the zoning to downtown mixed use up to 40 stories with conditions. The previous zoning allowed up to 12 stories, which was enough height for the company's original plans for the site, an 8-story mixed-use building. However, while those plans were approved, it appears the developer is now aiming for a bigger project. A Dalian attorney said during a November 7 City Council meeting that Dalian believes there is significant interest for a building taller than 12 stories in this part of downtown. The new zoning allows for up to 808 residential units, 23,776 square feet of retail space, and 739,778 square feet of office space. Dalian Development has not responded to requests for comment. The site includes 501, 509, 513, and 515 Hillsborough Street, 502, 510, 512, and 514 West Morgan Street, and 10 Southwest Street. There is currently a mix of single-story office and retail spaces on site. The lots have a total assessed value of about $6.9 million. There are two conditions attached to the new zoning: certain uses prohibited and an affordability contribution. If the final development plan is equal to or fewer than 301 residential units, Dalian must contribute $180,000 to the city's affordable housing program. If the approved plan is more than 301 units, the company must contribute the $180,000 and an additional $40,000 per unit above 300. The 1.12-acre site is near properties with 20- and 40-story zonings to the northeast, east, and south. To the west side of the site is mostly 12-story heights and lower. This stretch of Hillsborough has the 20-story 400H Tower and the 19-story 301 Hillsborough Building. Also, the Holiday Inn property on Hillsborough Street has approved site plans for a 20-story mixed-use building, and the Fallon Company is seeking 40 stories for the next phase of its Raleigh Crossing development. Downtown Cary adding more luxury condos. Cary's growth streak is adding townhome-style condos with a luxury element near the new downtown park. Lock 7 Development of Washington, D.C. will start construction on 17 condominiums in first quarter 2024. The condos, called the Massey, will start at $940,000 and have the option to include private elevators for an extra $45,000. There will also be private rooftop terraces for each condo. There will be two floor plans to choose from. One includes the option to have an elevator going from the first floor, a two-car garage, to the rooftop deck. The home prices go as high as $1.23 million, which are the floor plans with the optional elevator. The $45,000 for the elevator would be on top of the $1.23 million. Floor plans range from 2,304 square feet to 2,709 square feet. The homes will be less than a half mile from the newly opened downtown Cary Park. And finally, tech-savvy townhomes on the way. New homes starting at $1.39 million are under construction in downtown Raleigh near Shaw University. A development team that includes Chapel, Concept 8 Holdings, the Raleigh Architecture Company, and Southern Energy Management, NC, is building IDLE, a 10-home net-zero energy-ready community. Johnny Chapel, owner-broker with Chapel, says the team started construction this past summer and that the first homes will be ready for move-in in second quarter 2024. The goal is to have two homes sold by the end of 2023 and have all homes constructed by fall 2024. Chapel says the development will cost about $11 million. Home Trust Bank is providing a construction loan. And now we'll go back to the Viewpoint page to read a guest column written by Troy Kickler, who is a senior fellow at the John Locke Foundation, and Jane Shaw Stroop, who is the chairperson of the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. The headline, Don't Forget the Black Entrepreneurs. The long-awaited North Carolina Freedom Park is now open to the public. Located next to the North Carolina General Assembly building, the one-acre park consists of stone monuments carved with statements by black leaders and abolitionists, past and present, who have ties to North Carolina. Park creators chose to focus primarily on people from the political world, including abolitionists such as David Walker and Harriet Jacobs. The decision, however, left out more than a few exemplary black entrepreneurs who could have been honored. The state's history is blessed with a number of black business leaders and trailblazers, both free and enslaved, who made names for themselves in private enterprise. Lunsford Lane, 1803 to 1879, like his parents, was an enslaved domestic servant in the Raleigh area. Lunsford made money by doing tasks like chopping wood. Although he remained enslaved, he began to sell tobacco pipes with the help of his father. The two developed Edward and Lunsford Lane Tobacco. It became popular with North Carolina legislators. By 1835, Lane was able to purchase his freedom and that of his wife, mother, and children for $3,500. That would be about $100,000 in today's dollars. Lane's life was far from easy. His freedom was not recognized by the state of North Carolina because it was based on purchase, not meritorious services. Eventually, he had to leave the state. When Lane returned, he was tarred and feathered by an angry mob, but survived. Charles Clinton Spaulding, 1874 to 1952, led the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company from 1900 to 1952, a span during which it became the largest black-owned business in the entire country. The life insurance company was created by seven black businessmen, including Spaulding's uncle. Each of the seven invested $50 in the new venture. Spaulding's uncle and another investor, John Merrick, hired him to sell policies. Under Spaulding's management, the firm grew dramatically. Its Durham location became nationally known as the Black Wall Street, directly as a result of the North Carolina Mutual's prosperity and their bank it subsequently formed. Joe Lewis Dudley, born 1937, was born during the Great Depression near Beaufort. He attended North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro. In 1957, he was running out of money for school, so he went to New York and joined Fuller Products Company as a salesman. Owned by black businessman Samuel B. Fuller, this national company provided hair products for black women. Dudley earned enough money to obtain a degree in business administration at NC A&T. When Fuller had trouble supplying enough products in the late 1960s, Dudley and his wife Eunice started their own company in Greensboro. Dudley's Beauty Center and Salon was successful from the very beginning, eventually becoming one of the nation's largest black-owned businesses. In 1984, Dudley bought the rights to Fuller products and moved back to Greensboro. Today, the Dudley's daughter, Ursula Dudley Oglesby, runs the business. Stories of Lane, Spalding, and Dudley will resonate with North Carolinians. They would make excellent additions to Freedom Park. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read some of the big number sections sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first is $12 million, the amount Austrian tech firm HoloLight, which picked Durham over Atlanta for its U.S. headquarters, has snagged to accelerate its growth. $20 million. That's the total that Arame Therapeutics has set in a recent offering, according to a securities filing. The Durham biopharmaceutical firm is developing a drug-device combination to treat two forms of pulmonary hypertension. The next number is, or percentage, is 68.9%. That was Wake County's hotel occupancy rate as of September 30, according to the county's third quarter report released by the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau. That's up 4.3% year to date and higher than the state's average, 63.2%, and the national average, 64.3%. 1,500. Roughly the number of homes that a 500-acre mixed-use project in Pittsburgh called Reeves Farm could include after the project received rezoning approval from the Pittsburgh Board of Commissioners. And our last number is $1.6 million. That's how much new homes will start at in a new custom home development, Shinleaf Estates, in North Raleigh near Falls Lake. The homes will go up to $3 million. And we'll leave you with the Business Pulse survey question. How will you do your holiday shopping this year? 154 responses. 57% say online. 36% say online and in-store purchases. 4% say Amazon. And 3% say in stores. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.